Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Koki Jana Bala Bha Kiri Varatha Gopijana Valabha Girivaradhari Yashodananda Vraja Janarandana Yashodanandana Vraja Janarandana Yashodanandana Vraja Janarandana Yashodanandana Vraja Janaranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Hare Krishna Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya 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 Grintaraj Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto. Canto is entitled Creation of the Fourth Order. Chapter 10, Dhruva Maharaja's Fight with the Yakshas. This is beginning with text number 6.
Dhadma Shankam Brihad Bahu Kam Dishas Chanunadayan Yenod Vigna Drishakshatayar
The word-for-word translations, Dadmao, blue, as in B-L-E-W, Shankham, conch shell,
Brihat Bahu,
the mighty armed,
Kum,
the sky,
Disha cha,
and all directions,
Anunadayan,
causing to resound,
Yena,
by which,
Udvigna Drisha,
appeared very anxious,
Krata,
my dear Vidura,
Upadevya,
the wives of the Yakshas,
Atrasan,
became frightened,
Prasham,
greatly. Translation. Maitreya continued, My dear Vidura, as soon as Dhruva Maharaj reached Alakapuri, he immediately blew his conch shell. Just like we blow the conch shell at the beginning of the arti, same thing. And the sound reverberated throughout the entire sky and in every direction. The wives of the Yakshas became very much frightened. From their eyes, it was apparent that they were full of anxiety. There's no purport until a few more verses, so we'll just read through the translations until we get to the purport. O hero Vidura, the greatly powerful heroes of the Yakshas, unable to tolerate the resounding vibration of the conch shell of Dhruva Maharaj, came forth from their city with weapons and attacked Dhruva. Dhruva Maharaj, who was a great charioteer and certainly a great bowman also, immediately began to kill them by simultaneously discharging three arrows at a time. When the heroes of the Yakshas saw that all their heads were being thus threatened by Dhruva Maharaj, they could very easily understand their awkward position, and they concluded that they would certainly be defeated. But as heroes, they lauded the action of Dhruva. They congratulated Dhruva for being a hero and killing them. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This spirit of fighting in a sporting attitude is very significant in this verse. The Yakshas were severely attacked. Dhruva Maharaj was their enemy, but still, upon witnessing the wonderful heroic acts of Maharaj Dhruva, they were very pleased with him. This straightforward appreciation of an enemy's prowess is characteristic of real Kshatriya spirit.
Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namah Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Utapada Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Sha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sarvetam Sabadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakambitam Sha He Krishna Karuna Sindha Dina Bandhu Jagat Pate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpaturubhyashcha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Tevaya Dalato Lagnaistair Ishubhi Sarva Evahi Matvanirastam Atmanam Ashamsan Karmatasyatat. So Dhruva Maharaj was a great king billions of years ago on earth.
Who?
Dhruva Maharaj. And we're going to tell you his story for some background. For the last four chapters, his whole biography was given in this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Dhruva was the son of a king named King Uttanapada. You can take a look at the visual aids. On the left page, King Uttanapada was there, and he has his two little boys. One of them is sitting on his lap, and the other has been kind of rejected see that. Yeah, so Dhruva was the little boy who got rejected by the wicked stepmother. Okay, so Maharaja Dhanapad, as many kings in those days, had more than one wife. He had an older and a younger wife, and he was henpecked by the younger wife because she was very attractive to him. So he did whatever she wanted. He had one son with his elder wife and one with his younger. So this younger wife, she became proud because she knew the king liked her best. And so when her son was wanting to play with the king, no problem. But when his other wife's son came to also come play on his lap, she said, "You're going to have to take birth in my womb again if you want to sit on your father's lap. You don't get to sit on the throne." It's like harsh words. Okay, but he's 5 years old. So normally a 5-year-old, if you say harsh words to him, they go and play. It doesn't really affect their heart. But Dhruva was an uncommon boy, and he took it very seriously. And he got offended. And he went away. With tears in his eyes, he was angry. And so he went to his mother. His mother said, "You know, really, there's nothing I can do, Dhruva. Your father likes the other wife more than me. I have no influence here. I think the only person..." And so what is it you want, Dhruva? And Dhruva said that, "I want a kingdom greater than my father's. I want a kingdom greater than my grandfather's and greater than my great-grandfather's. I want to be the greatest king." So he had this kind of rejection complex going on. He wanted to compensate for the feeling of inadequacy he had. So he wanted the ultimate kingdom. And she said, "Well, there's really nothing I can do. May I take that? Thank you. There's really nothing I can do. So, Dhruva," his mother continued, "I recommend that you go see God. You're going to have to ask help from God himself. There's nothing I can do." So Dhruva, in his childlike innocence, asked, "Okay, where's God? Where can I find this God?" And his mother, in a moment of philosophical inquiry, thought, "How to explain this? I've heard that yogis go to seek God in the forest." So Dhruva immediately took off all of his princely garb, put on the mere loincloth of a yogi, and went off into the forest to find God. Talk about determination. He's 5 years old. He went out. Okay, so here we see Dhruva Maharaj in the forest, in his little loincloths there.
Okay.
And he's doing some austerities. He's reducing his eating. He's only eating the fruits and that he finds in the forest, which are just little berries. He's eating roots of trees. He's eating leaves. Especially in India, the forests have some little bit of things that you can sustain yourself on because it's a semi-tropical area. But at the same time, come on, you're living in the forest. It's really austere. So he's doing that. And he's only drinking water from the river. And he's just meditating on the Lord as the yogis do to try to have an audience with God. After doing this for some time, a great sage, Narada Muni, who's sort of a mystical sage, he can travel throughout space. He's a powerful yogi. And he heard about this 5-year-old meditating in the forest and became interested. Who is this boy? So he went down and said to Dhruva, he tested Dhruva. He said, "You're only 5 years old. What are you doing out here? You should go home and play." And Dhruva very respectfully said, "I appreciate your advice." Before Dhruva spoke, Narada Muni continued and said, "You shouldn't be angry at your stepmother. Being angry is going to disturb your spiritual life. It'll make you forget that you're a spirit soul, and you'll start to think about me, and you'll forget God. You'll get all egocentric." So Dhruva said, "Sir, the advice you gave me is very good, But it would only be good for someone who is advanced. I'm not so advanced, and so I'm taking this very seriously. I can't give it up. I respectfully reject your advice. So Narad Muni was impressed. He thought, wow, this boy is serious. What kind of 5-year-old would ever say something like that? Prabhupada writes in his purport to that verse, he says, generally, whenever a small child speaks philosophy, everyone is interested to hear. They never speak philosophy. So if you hear a small child speaking, that's really cool. It's very captivating. So Dhruva did that. And Narada Muni then felt that Dhruva had passed the test of his spiritual master. So Narada Muni, after feeling so happy with Dhruva's determination, he gave him some advice for how he can see God. He wanted to help him now. He said, I want you to do 3 things, Dhruva. You'll meditate on the holy name of the Lord. He gave him a mantra. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Chant that mantra for 6 months. Chant it attentively. And he gave him 2 more advices. One, he said, you can make a deity out of the mud. Since you're in the forest, you can't build an elaborate kind of deity like we have here. Narada Muni gave Dhruva Maharaj the system of deity worship which would be appropriate for his time, place, and situation. In effect, because he's out in the forest, he can't get a marble deity. And he's only 5 years old anyway. So where's he going to acquire the funds to have one of those deities constructed? So Narada Muni advised him, you make a deity out of the mud on the ground, a form of Krishna, and you worship that deity with the local fruits and roots that you find in the forest as offerings to him. Offer him something to eat every day, something to drink. In this way, you'll develop your affection for Krishna. And the third thing he advised Dhruva was giving him details about what Krishna is like. He gave him descriptions of the Lord. He said, real yogis meditate upon the transcendental form of the Lord as he stands on the whirl of the lotus of their hearts, the jewel-like nails of his lotus feet glittering. The Lord is always smiling, and the devotee should constantly see the Lord in this form as he looks very mercifully toward the devotee. In this way, the meditator should look toward the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the bestower of all benedictions. The Lord is decorated with small golden bells around his waist, and his lotus feet are decorated with golden ankle bells. All his bodily features are very attractive and pleasing to the eyes. He's always peaceful, calm, and quiet, and very pleasing to the eyes and the mind. And there are about 6 other verses where Narada is just describing Krishna to Dhruva, so that when Dhruva is meditating, he knows how to envision Krishna, according to the authorities. So Dhruva did it. He meditated on his mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. He did deity worship, and he just constantly absorbed himself in thoughts of God. And within 6 months, the Supreme Personality of Godhead actually appeared to Dhruva in the forest. First, he appeared in Dhruva's heart, within. And then Dhruva, because he had God within his heart, fully manifested. God is in everyone's heart, actually, but because Dhruva was aware of God, he had that connection, he was empowered by the Lord. And whatever Dhruva did affected the universe. When he was performing his yoga, one of the aspects of his yoga practice was to stop breathing, to hold his breath within his body and circulate his life air within. One of the mystic powers that a yogi can do. And when Dhruva did that, when he stopped breathing, everyone in the universe began to suffocate. The whole universe began to stop breathing because Dhruva stopped breathing. Because of the Lord in his heart, the Lord is in everyone's heart, so when Dhruva stopped breathing, everyone had to stop breathing. And the demigods in the heavenly planets who are responsible for making sure everyone can breathe, they got an anxiety. What's happening here? We can't do our job. So they went to see Vishnu, Krishna, God, and asked, what's happening? It's not time for the universe to be destroyed yet, but it seems like things are winding down here. So Vishnu was smiling, and he said, don't worry, I'll take care of this. You go back to your planets, and I'll go speak to Dhruva. He's actually doing yoga and causing you to be suffocating. Don't be in any anxiety. I'll protect you, as always. So the Lord then appeared, came down on his carrier to Dhruva, where Dhruva was meditating. At that time, Dhruva's eyes were closed, meditating on the Lord within. But suddenly that form disappeared to Dhruva, and his mind became agitated. Where did he go? I just saw him. And in a state of anxiety, he opened his eyes. And then the Lord was physically in front of him. He was like, whoa, okay. And he fell down and offered obeisances. And he then got up, and he wanted to offer prayers, but he was only 5 years old, so he didn't know how. And the Lord then took his conch shell and touched Dhruva's forehead with the conch shell. And then these prayers automatically started coming out of Dhruva's mouth. These are very beautiful prayers. We don't have time to go through all of them, but they're very ecstatic prayers. And Dhruva then basically just prayed for pure devotion to God. I just want to serve you, my Lord. I came to you looking for a kingdom, but now I feel really bad because I have you. Who needs a kingdom when you have God? I was looking for broken glass when I had a diamond. These are Dhruva's words. And the Lord then said, you've been purified by my association, so you don't have any material desires, but still I'm going to give you the kingdom that you wanted in the past, even though you don't want it anymore. First, you're going to rule on this earth for 36,000 years, and then you're going to have a kingdom. You're going to have a kingdom greater than anyone who's ever had a kingdom before. You will rule over the pole star, which we call the North Star. That planet is the planet where Dhruva will rule. That's what the Lord said. No one has ever ruled there before, and you will be the ruler of that planet. That planet is actually equal to the spiritual world, even though it's in the material world, because I personally live there. The Lord manifests a form on that pole star. So it's an embassy of the spiritual world in the material world. And you, Dhruva, will get to rule over that planet, even though no one else has ever ruled over it before. Dhruva then went home. He went back home. And Maharaj Uttanapad, who was the king, the father of Dhruva, he was in complete depression because his 5-year-old son has been gone in the forest for 6 months. He was sure he's dead. And then he got news, Maharaj Uttanapad got news that Dhruva's coming home. And he was mixed feelings. He thought, this is great news, but at the same time, who could ever believe that? That's like hearing that someone dead is coming home. But then he got advice from Narada Muni. Narada Muni, the same Muni who came to speak to Dhruva, came to speak to Maharaj Uttanapad and said, he is really coming. You need to come receive him. And so he became excited and arranged for a festival, a procession, like a parade, to go respectfully and joyously receive Dhruva. There were elephants. The two wives of the king, Suruchi and Suniti, one of them, Suniti is Dhruva's mother, and Suruchi is the wicked stepmother, they were sitting together side by side on a palanquin coming to see Dhruva. And Dhruva finally met up with the procession, and he was completely changed. Before he was angry at Suruchi, but now he saw everyone with an equal eye. Everyone's just the child of God. He bowed down before both of his mothers. He embraced his brother Uttama. And when the king embraced him, The king felt love of God just by touching Dhruva. He was such a spiritually surcharged personality that simply by being in his proximity, everyone became devoted to God. Then Dhruva went home, and the king, after many years of staying at home with the king eventually took his spiritual life took his spiritual life more seriously and decided, I'm going to the forest now. I'm no longer going to be the king. I don't want to die as the king. I want to spend the last years of my life focused on God. So I'm going to the forest, and now I see that my son Dhruva is old enough to take over the kingdom, so I'm going to make him the king. And the whole kingdom was happy. They wanted Dhruva to be the king. So king went to the forest, and Dhruva became king. Now, one day, Dhruva's brother Uttama went to the forest, and he was hunting. Uttama was the other little boy who was sitting on the king's lap in the beginning. He went out into the forest. Now he's a grown-up. He went out to the forest, and he was hunting animals. And some yakshas, who are super powerful people, they came out and killed Uttama. They killed Uttama while he was hunting in the forest. Dhruva got news of this and became really angry at the yakshas and went out on in a rage to go kill all the yakshas. He was overwhelmed with anger, actually. He went out to kill all the yakshas. He came to their city of Alakapuri and blew his conch shell. That's where we were at today. And the yakshas started to attack him, and he counterattacked and started to kill them. But these yakshas, Prabhupada writes in the purport, they, even though they were being harassed and threatened and killed by Dhruva, these yakshas were so brave and heroic that they were really impressed by Dhruva's prowess, even though he was killing them. They were thinking, wow, what a fighter. He's really whipping us, you know? And they had some respect for that. It's a fine point of Vedic culture, which you find even in the, I mentioned this to you in the past, in the Mahabharata, which is the war of Kurukshetra, which is in the Bhagavad Gita. Every night, the heads of the two armies who were fighting would meet together and have lunch, or have dinner. Because they had this respect for each other. It wasn't about hatred, it was just a business. They had to fight. They had some political reasons. But personally, they had no vendettas. They were all enlightened. So the yakshas here who were being killed by Dhruva were pretty enlightened also, enough to respect that their enemy was praiseworthy in some regard. So the Vedic culture, the kind of people who would have been hearing Srimad Bhagavatam 5,000 years ago, they would have been similarly cultured. They would have been appreciative of these fine points. And the Bhagavatam would reinforce that culture within their society. So Prabhupada wants us to also have these kinds of qualities of respecting the good we see in others, even if we have to disagree with them on something. We have to be able to find some common ground, because God is in their heart. God's in my heart, and God's in their heart. So when we have this kind of common ground, ultimately, we'll be able to serve each other in a cooperative way, and we won't have to just fight like cats and dogs. And we'll see in the later verses that Dhruva will have to stop this fighting also. It's not going to continue indefinitely. In future verses, Swayambhuva Manu is going to come and tell Dhruva that you've killed enough yakshas. These aren't even the yakshas who killed your brother. You're just going off and doing basically genocide. Because some yaksha killed your brother, now you're killing all the yakshas. This is so racist. And so Dhruva, when he heard these harsh words, he got some sense and lamented for his offensive behavior and gave up this killing. Then it describes more of Dhruva's rulership over the kingdom of the world. Okay, so that brings us to a good point for questions now. If you have some questions or comments, there's a lot of information there.
Why were they hunting animals? They weren't vegetarians.
Yeah, so the no, that's good. This is a good part of the class. The kings in Vedic times hunted ferocious animals like tigers who were threatening the yogis who lived in the forest. They wanted to give the yogis a safe opportunity to practice meditation, so these predatory animals would actually kill the yogis. So the kings had permission in Vedic culture to kill ferocious animals with bows. There were no guns. It was a fair fight, basically. Sometimes the kings would actually hand-to-hand combat the tigers, which is really intense. But another thing, they weren't killing rabbits and squirrels. They were killing tigers. And the second thing, they weren't eating the meat, but they were using the skins. They would dry the skins out and give those to the yogis, because the yogis would just wear a loincloth. So sometimes the kings would donate a tiger skin to the yogis and things like that. And other animals would eat the flesh of the tiger, so it wouldn't get wasted. And there were humans in Vedic culture who did eat meat, but those were like lower class. Those wouldn't have been the kings. Another reason why the kings hunted was because they wanted to develop their fighting art. They wanted to be able to be very strong fighters so that when there were criminals or aggressors coming to steal the kingdom or steal the women of the kingdom, the kings had to be strong enough to suppress the enemies. The kings in Vedic culture actually fought. They didn't just send all the boys to fight and they sit in their cushy chair. But they were the frontline fighter. The king was actually the first person to fight in a war. So therefore the kings hunted so that they would be able to fight in a war. That's another reason. Does that make some sense?
Yeah. What's the significance of the couch that I meant to ask that when I first got here?
Yeah, it's something like a trumpet. It's
What
used.
can I hear?
They're available online. You can get them at krishna.com. They come from the ocean. They're mollusks who live inside of them. When the mollusk abandons it, then it washes to the beach, and people collect it. They carve some little designs on it. And normally it has a solid end, but if you cut that end off, then it has a hole, and you can blow it like a trumpet. It's like nature's trumpet. So the conch shell is used the same way a trumpet's used for celebrations. When there's a big procession, people are like, "Boo!" It's like fun. Or for battle, just like trumpet, it's used to signify that we're rallying our strength. And when Vishnu touched Dhruva Maharaj's head with his conch shell, it gave Dhruva transcendental intelligence so that he could offer wonderful prayers. So that's another meaning of the conch shell there. It's the Lord's intelligence. Yeah.
So he ended up getting angry.
He did get angry, but he got over it. And then, yeah, so even as devotees, we sometimes get angry and stuff, but we're supported by the community of devotees, just like Dhruva was supported by the Swayambhuva Manu who came and said, "Enough." So we have to be able to have at least one person in our life who we can trust to correct us when we get off course. If we're so proud that we never accept anybody's authority except our own, then there's very little room for growth. So it's nice to have a little humility. Okay. Any other points?
Did you ask me a question?
Yeah, any other questions?
Sorry.
No, no, any other questions?
I'm trying to think. And this was before before the Yuga? Or?
This is before. This is in the Satya Yuga. Time is measured in these huge cycles. We're in the Kali Yuga. There were three Yugas before that, and this was the first of the four Yugas.
Oh, wow. That was a long time.
Millions of years ago.
Millions?
Millions of years ago.
Millions?
Millions. That's described in Bhagavad Gita also, how long the Yugas last. So you can check that out in the 8th chapter.
Millions?
Millions.
Of years ago?
Yeah. And people live long.
Do they have the text that's millions of years old, or is it just they were keeping track and put it on a different paper and wrote the same stuff?
Actually, writing didn't have to come around until this Kali Yuga. Before that, everyone had perfect memory, and it was just oral. Everything was audio. So then in Kali Yuga our memories got really bad, so we had to write stuff down. Yeah. And the age was different. Four things diminished. As these ages go down, as the ages progress, four qualities of human life diminish. One is our memory, so we have to write it down. One is our stature. People physically got smaller. One is our piety, our goodness. People get more degraded. And finally, one is lifespan. In the Kali Yuga, generally the max someone lives is 100 years, right? Nobody lives much more than 100 years in this age of Kali. Previous age, Dwapara, the max was 1,000 years. People live for 1,000 years. In Treta Yuga, 10,000 years. And in this one, the Satya Yuga, everyone lived for roughly 100,000 years. And that's how Dhruva could rule the kingdom for 36,000 years.
He was alive, though.
Yeah, he ruled the kingdom for 36,000 years. It's like 36 years for us. Because they had a longer lifespan. They were taller. The quality of food was better. This is an interesting point to me. Today, a mango, it has a huge seed in the middle, you know, that pit? In Satya Yuga, the seed of a mango was like the seed of a watermelon. It was all fruit. And the skin was like the skin of an apple. It was super thin skin and all nectar. And by the end of this Kali Yuga, it'll be all seed and thick, leathery skin with no fruit in the middle. The quality of life goes down. Standard of life, living goes down. Okay. Okay. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.